U.S. weather, Brazilian weather, flip a coin on which one matters the most to the grain markets at this moment. Trade and delivery month corn is as crazy as I've ever seen it, and the volatility is building across the grain markets and the machinery markets. We'll also check up on the restaurant recovery and get into some grain bin safety.
Live from a blessed rainy day for some of us via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with Mike Watley, Vice President of State Affairs and Grassroots Advocacy at the National Restaurant Association. Then we hear from Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. In the final segment, Nebraska students Benjamin Johnson and Zane Zests tell us about their award-winning invention, the grain weevil. After the news with Clinton Griffiths, we'll get a weather update from Michael Clark of BAMWX. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Joe. Thanks, buddy. Yeah, man. Thanks for jumping in there. Are you okay? Did you make it through there with no trouble?
I'm glad I'm sitting down.
And you're getting some rain over there, huh, guys?
Nice rain. Good rain.
Yeah, we had a pretty good rain overnight, Chip. Didn't think we were going to get a whole bunch, but I'll tell you, an inch or so was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in northeast Iowa. We expected some showers overnight. Some areas did get some rains, but boy, here at the Flory Ranch, I woke up and the pavement was dry. Mm. There's a little bit of moisture out there right now, but it has been a disappointing opportunity for rains to this point here, Clinton. It's dry, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were doing quite a bit of field work planning around here over the weekend. And oh, I'll tell you, there's a lot of dust flying as they're just kind of putting it in, waiting on that shower to come. But, you know, pretty lucky in this region. But, man, you go a little bit further west, it starts to dry out. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Planning progress. We get that. We get the update this afternoon after the afternoon show. And I'm telling you, there are some large operations that once they got in the field this spring, Clinton, they didn't shut down until everything was in the ground.
No, I believe it. It's moving fast. Oh. I mean, we're first couple of days of May here.
And right.
We're making a lot of progress. You know, it wasn't that long ago we were planting in June, sometimes in July.
Yeah, just trying to get things done. That's back to 2019. Yeah. All right, man. Hey, I know that you got a lot of news for us to get to. Let's get to it.
Yeah, let's go through some of it. As you mentioned there off the top of the show, a little bit of up and down here in the markets, a little volatility over continued concern over Brazil's corn crop. Grain starting hot today, front month contracts nearing $7.60 for corn, beans approaching that $16 mark, but it's trended back down since there. It's about even here midday. USDA's current forecast out in Brazil calling for 109 million tons of corn. Some sources now saying the crop could be in the low 90s.
Yes.
Stone X calling it 100 million. Regardless, the trend isn't necessarily higher. The Safrinha crop there facing major stress from drought and dryness. Corn prices here at home have increased more than 30% this year alone, Chip.
Yeah. So every 10 million tons of corn that you take off of that Brazilian crop, it's about 400 million bushels. Those are bushels that the global community needs. Okay? Those bushels have basically been spoken for, Clinton. They're going to get them from someplace, and that's the reason that we're seeing so much volatility in that old crop corn market.
Some of the other challenges facing our own crops here at home, if you're looking for a job, truck drivers definitely in high demand. Freight industry executives saying there's a big-time squeeze on trucking capacity. David Menzel, he's the CEO over at Echo Global Logistics. He said during an earnings call, there's more freight than trucks, or maybe I should say, than drivers. Trucking fleets have been stepping up equipment orders, raising driver pay as they compete for labor with industries like construction. But those efforts still haven't caught up with demand as the freight market is roaring back on this expanding economy, pushing up prices for goods across the economy, Chip. And I think that inflation issue is something we're not talking enough about, but we will start.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the reasons that we're not, that the marketplace really isn't talking about it that much, is because we continue to hear from Fed Chairman Powell that it's not an issue. But you look at the supply chain issues that we've been talking about, and Clinton, you guys have been doing a great job covering it on AgWeb and everything, the supply chain issues. Throw on top of that a lack of labor in the delivery process. It's only going to get worse.
Oh, right. You know, first it was port issues, and then now it's kind of translating into, oh, well, we've got to move all these goods. Well, and I don't know what gas is where you're at. It hit $4 a gallon in California. It's $3 a gallon here in Indiana.
My goodness.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that happens fast. One of the reasons we're seeing lumber prices skyrocket more than 325% since last year is this whole trucking issue. Analysts say three things really causing that. It's a labor shortage, wet weather in the southeast, putting a damper on some harvest there, and then millers can't get rid of sawdust and chips. So the experts say lumber inventories were tight leading up to this pandemic, but there's right now a lot of wood available. It's just, you know, being able to move it all. Experts continue to report that African swine fever is still spreading in China. This is according to the Pork Checkoff. Michael Ellerman with Aspire Agritech Consulting spoke about it at the Carthage Spring Swine Symposium this past week. Ellerman's based out of China. He said there's a strain of ASF caused by a vaccine. The vaccine strain's causing most of the current ASF cases, and it's now causing the same number of problems as the wild strain, but it's less deadly. Pig prices there are so high that China producers can make a profit, Chip, by weaning just two pigs a litter.
Oh my gosh.
Two pigs a litter. Lean hog futures here at home today for June were up more than $3 here in early trade.
Yeah. Wow. Good stuff, Clinton. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you got
it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, Clinton Griffiths, Ag Day. All right, let's bring in Michael Clark. He's with BAMWX.com. Michael. Boy, here we are with a bunch of scattered rains all over, but some severe weather potential down in the Gulf states, right?
Yeah, well, it'll actually make its way into the southeastern Corn Belt. I'm really concerned tonight for southern Missouri, Illinois, western Tennessee, and Kentucky for some damaging winds and possibly some pretty large hail on the onset of this tonight. So keep your eyes peeled down there tonight for sure.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that. The rainfall event here in northeast Iowa has been fairly disappointing to this point, Michael. Does it get any better?
Unfortunately, I don't think so, Chip. You're going to get some light rain. It's better than nothing, but the better prospects for rain are going to be south and east overall. There is a potential in eastern, southeastern Iowa. Some thunderstorms may develop later today, but it's pretty cloudy and rainy right now. That may hinder some development. We'll have to keep an eye on that.
Okay. The northern plains, I'm talking North Dakota, South Dakota, Red River Valley up in Minnesota. Any sign of precip coming their way?
Not right now. I don't think so. I mean, there's nothing that's going to make any significant impacts. I mean, there's a couple of chances of some lighter rain in the forecast later in the week, but I don't think so right now of anything significant, not yet.
All right. Pretty moderate temperatures this week too, right, Michael?
Except for Friday morning, Chip. Watch the eastern Corn Belt. There could be some frost Friday morning. Big cold front.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yes. Big cold front late week.
So watch the eastern Belt Friday morning for some potential frost. Wow. Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you next week. Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. And I tell you, I've been having conversations with small business owners, conversations with farmers, conversations with family members, friends that are revealing how difficult the hiring environment is right now. How difficult it is not only to get people hired, but how difficult it is to get people to apply for a position at a restaurant, at a small business. That's one of the things that I want to talk about right now with Mike Watley, who is the Vice President of State Affairs and Grassroots Advocacy for the National Restaurant Association. Mike's become a real friend of AgriTalk. And Mike, we certainly appreciate you coming back on the show this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
You bet, man. With as much as is happening in your segment of this economy, Mike, we've got to keep track of everything that is happening. But first things first here, the Restaurant Revitalization Act is coming our way here in less than 2 hours. What is it? What does it mean for restaurant owners?
Yeah, so it's a big day for the restaurant industry. We, starting last March, so March 2020, when the economy was shutting down and it was such a scary environment, we started pushing Congress to pass a restaurant-specific fund to help restaurants, because restaurants were among the first businesses to be shut down, and because of the nature of hospitality, will be among the last to fully recover. So since March, we pushed for a restaurant-specific fund. Last December, Congress took action and passed the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which is a $28.6 billion grant program targeted at restaurants. And to your point, it goes live here in just a matter of minutes. So if any restaurateurs are listening in by any chance and aren't ready to apply at 12 p.m. Eastern time, please go to the Small Business Administration's Restaurant Revitalization Fund page as soon as possible, because this money is going to go quickly.
Okay, now we have seen some of the other funds that have been made available to the restaurant, to restaurants. Those funds, they've gone through them fairly quick. $28.6 billion seems like a lot of money, Mike. Is it going to be adequate?
It seems like a lot of money, but when you look at the past 13 months, restaurant sales are down $280 billion. So you're looking at roughly, 10 or so percent. You know, it's a big number, but end of the day, it will not cover everyone. So we're likely going to have to go back to Congress and ask for more money. So this is really important, as was the Paycheck Protection Program round one and round two. But so much has impacted the restaurant industry that, that $280 billion in lost sales, that's going to take a while to recover. And this grant program is, it's really important, really great, but likely is not going to cover everything that the restaurant industry is going to need.
What does this application process look like, Mike? I mean, what kind of losses is it designed to cover?
So if you were a restaurant that was in business pre-pandemic, that's the easiest calculation out there. You basically take your 2019 sales, you deduct your 2020 sales, and then you deduct any PPP money that you receive. So if you've already got PPP money, you deduct that as well. And whatever that number is, that represents your loss of revenue, and you can apply for that dollar figure. And there are caps depending upon how big of an enterprise you are. But this program is truly trying to shore up any money that you lost because of the pandemic in 2020.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Now, some of the restaurants, and I'm thinking mostly of franchises here with the drive-up window, saw business. I don't want to say it was really good. I will say it. It was really good business if they had an established drive-up window out there. The problem that some of those restaurants are having now, you tell me, what's the status of the industry in general right now, Mike? Is it good? Is it coming back? What's the status?
So I would say certainly coming back. And to your point, it is very recovery over the past couple of months has varied depending upon segment.
Yeah.
If you're quick service and your business is primarily off-premise sales to begin with, you were impacted less than a full-service restaurant that needs a packed house every night. But the interesting shift, and you mentioned this in your teaser for the segment, is how tough it is for restaurant operators to get employees right now. We surveyed the workforce in January, and back then 8% of restaurant operators said recruitment and retention was their top challenge. Fast forward to last month, April, that number had risen to 57%. And we're hearing anecdotally from operators that some are worried they're not going to be able to be open on Mother's Day if they would like to be, because they just don't have enough employees to staff the restaurant. So it's a huge challenge. There are lots of factors going into it, but you're starting to see surging demand from customers who want to get back into restaurants. And our concern is that if our operators are not able to find enough employees to staff their restaurants, they're going to be missing out on that demand at a time when they need that money and they need that recovery the most.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this one gets into touchy ground, kind of sensitive ground, because I've mentioned it on the air before, and I know that I'm opening up a floodgate for emails, but the unemployment benefits, I'm not saying that getting a job and going back to work wouldn't provide more revenue, but the unemployment benefits, the way they stand right now, are providing enough revenue that some in the workforce have decided to stay home. Are you hearing that? And how widespread of a problem might that be?
So we're hearing a whole host of challenges related to workforce issues, and unemployment for sure is one of those. But there's a lot of uncertainty out there. I mean, vaccine rates are going up and have been in a good direction, but you're starting to see the number of vaccinations daily kind of cap and begin to go down a little bit. There's a childcare issue of a lot of folks are not able to have reliable childcare right now, so that's a big challenge. And also, I mean, look back in time to March. A lot of folks had their restaurants where they'd worked for years shut down because of the pandemic and shut down for months, and many of them looked at different lines of work and may have left the industry and may not be coming back immediately. So there are a number of challenges out there. You know, as we're rapidly moving out of, hopefully, the virus at this point, we're starting to have a conversation amongst our members in terms of, you know, what's next, what are the asks, how do we work with government at federal, state, and local level to make sure there are enough employees there for our operators to operate.
Right. That's my next question. What do the restaurant owners need the most over the next 6 months to get them back at least close to pre-pandemic business?
So we've said throughout the crisis, the number one way for restaurant operators to get back to normal is for everyone to feel comfortable dining out at a restaurant again. And the number one issue there is vaccines and making sure we eventually hit herd immunity so that everyone feels comfortable dining outside, dining inside, being comfortable to, you know, being near folks again so that hospitality can thrive. Once we get there, the industry can begin to recover on its own. Side note, as long as we can find enough employees. But getting there is critical because restaurants are a small, low margin business to begin with, 4 to 6%. And that's even in good times when you can have a packed house every night. So we have to get back to that point so that restaurants can start thriving again like they were pre-pandemic.
Right. Okay. So in the areas that maybe have been moving a little quicker to a full reopening of businesses and so on, are you hearing – what's the situation? I'm thinking of Texas. I'm thinking of Florida. What are some of the reports coming out of those areas that have opened up?
We're starting to see strong sales numbers in those jurisdictions. Okay. There's definitely pent-up demand. People have missed restaurants. They want to be back in. But, and we keep on saying it, we continue to hear, look, I could have my restaurant packed in a abiding by the safety guidelines. I could have my restaurant packed, but I can't because I don't have enough employees to make the shift work. So it's a big challenge. It's a big challenge for quick service restaurants, for full service restaurants. It's across the board. But I will note, we're also hearing the same thing from other industries, be it retail or others, who are saying, we're struggling right now with keeping up with demand in terms of staffing issues. So, as we pivot and shift out of the pandemic, I think as a nation and as a business community, this workforce shortage is going to be a top issue going forward for everyone.
It certainly is. Mike, thank you so much for making time for us and giving us an update, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You bet. And don't forget the Restaurant Revitalization Act. Restaurant owners, get to the Small Business Association site now and get that application in. All right, we got Machine Repeat up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, boy, choppy day in the grain markets to this point.
Yeah, definitely. Flip of the calendar, so we got a new month here and just surged to strong gains overnight. We've gotten a daytime trade, and the corn market's still trading to the upside, but it's come well off its highs, and so you're seeing the July contract, it got up almost to $7 overnight and now back to about 13, 15 cents off of those highs. But like I said, still being supported by the Safrinha corn issues down in Brazil, dryness there, and concerns with dryness here in the United States too as the planting season continues.
Yeah. The crop progress report that we get at about 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon, it's going to show some awfully impressive progress, isn't it, Beach?
Definitely. I think so. Guys went very actively last week, hoping that we'd get some rains here this week and on those newly seeded acres.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, this hog market, it's hard to hold it down.
Yeah, continue to push higher. The May contract, it has to watch the cash index pretty closely. But, boy, those summer month contracts are really exploding to the upside. New contract highs this morning and strong gains. So the June and July, even the August, is trading sharply higher here mid-morning.
What about the cattle complex?
Well, the strength in the corn market impacted feeder cattle, and they're under heavy pressure. That spilled over into live cattle futures, and traders are still waiting on the cash market to strengthen there. Got to hold on to those recent support levels. Yep.
All right, that's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us on this Monday morning, and Monday morning means it is time for our conversation with Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing today?
Doing just fine, just fine. Hey, I want to switch things up a little bit because you had you released the used values index late last week, and I think this is important enough information in here that let's spend some time talking about the index, what it's telling you, how it is calculated, and just get a better understanding of it. So first off, let's talk about the timing on it, Greg, because it's a quarterly index, correct?
Yep, it's a quarterly index, Chip. I kind of started it, I put out my first report 10 years ago, 2011, and at that time I went backwards 10 years, went over all the auction price data I've been compiling. And basically, the reason I started the report is kind of a 30,000-foot view of what's happening, a trend line with used equipment values, all types of used equipment. I was getting a lot of outreach from kind of the Wall Street crowd, actually, analysts and hedge funds, the big banks. They saw what I did, and they'd call to say, hey, Machine Repeat, what's happening? And I knew I needed to make a report, but frankly, I didn't know how to make a Wall Street report. So it took me a few years, but finally came out with it. And again, we put it out every quarter, and it's based on all the auction price data we've been compiling now for over 31 years. And we also work in, analysis of the data with dealer listings, price points, volume of listings, analyze trend line stuff there. So what we're trying to do is give a holistic view of what's happening with used equipment values, and also give an element of looking ahead for the next quarter, what we think could be happening down the pike here.
Okay. All right. That sets the stage. Now let's talk about the first quarter of 2021. This man, it's an impressive move that the index made in the first quarter, yeah. Greg.
Yeah, it's the second biggest jump I've seen on a quarterly basis ever, Chip. The only larger jump on a per quarter basis was fourth quarter of 07.
Right.
If we remember back, ethanol was obviously taking off like a rocket ship, and the commodity price, whatever it was. And I remember writing at the time that it was like a light switch just went off, just like bink, whoop, holy smokes, look what happened to the auction prices here. And this time, we're getting that light switch, but we were doing a light switch on top of a light switch, because really fourth quarter of 20 was very strong. And this now, after the first quarter, makes six quarters in a row I've seen used farm equipment values go up. And to put a number on it, which we try and do in this index, again, I'm not an expert on making Wall Street reports or whatever, but simple 1 to 10 rating scale. And when I started this 10 years ago, I said, okay, 6 is average or normal. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone in ag knows there is no normal, but when you've been doing it for 31 years, maybe that's long enough to say 6 is normal. So
sure.
Anyway, right now, we just shot up in the first quarter from 7.8 in fourth quarter to 8.5. And that's the highest index rating since fourth quarter of 13, which, of course, at that time, that was on the way down.
Right.
Index hit an all-time high of 9.5, first quarter of 13. I still think that was maybe the all-time highest used market, but we're getting really close right now. It has just been incredible here so far in 21.
Right, right. One of the things that I'm a chart guy, you look for the trends, mm-hmm. you look for the tendencies, the patterns in these charts, mm-hmm. and the rounded bottom that the index made yep. through that 2011 to 2019 period, really.
Right.
Talk about building a base and a floor on underneath these prices, right?
Yeah, I remember, Chip, writing a Farm Journal column, I think it was November of 15, or December, maybe it was December of 15. And if you look at the index chart, again, from second quarter of 13, it just cascades down through 13.
Yeah.
14 was the worst. It just felt like a rock. And
yep.
then 15, and by the end of 15, that's that floor you were talking about. So people basically had bought a lot of new iron from late 07 through 13, and dealers were stuck with a lot of large late model equipment on their lots, big planters, combine sprayers, high horse tractors. There was a glut, and it just took a while to start to work out from under that. But end of 15, early 16, that's when you talk about trying to time a purchase, and it's hard to time any market catch a falling knife.
Yeah.
That's when we hit the bottom. And
yep.
it held for about 3 years, kind of just static, kind of in that 6.5 range. And then it started to go up. I guess farmers needed to start end of 17, 18, hey, I need a new planter. I got to update her. I got to
yep.
update my combine. And now you've injected money into the system. And here's
yes.
the thing that I'm looking ahead at, Chip. I'm not really one for making predictions.
No.
But when you read the tea leaves and how this thing is rolling right now, and then you consider what's happening in Washington with proposed tax changes coming in some fashion. I think most people would agree that taxes are likely to go up. Capital gains could be some significant changes there. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at my chart and you look at the fourth quarter for 11 years in a row from 03 through 13, used values went up in the fourth quarter, and the last 5 years they've gone up in the fourth quarter. Now the money's flowing. Proposed tax changes are coming. So this is where I'm saying that I think a freight train is coming end of the year in terms of buying. So, again, I'm not one to tell, you know, your listeners who are sharp as tacks, hey, do this. But if you need equipment, you better get it quick.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that I assume you're feeling confidence in that outlook, Greg, is when you look at the inventory at the dealers across the country right now, there just isn't much.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chip. We've got, and I've shared a few out on social media, but on the back end of our website, machinerypete.com, like I said, we track volume of dealer listings.
Yeah.
And with the pandemic last year, it first showed up with like under 100 horse tractors, ATVs, garden tractors. People started spending money and dealer inventories crashed lower. Now we're seeing it on the high horse tractors. So we got this supply and demand line, and it's like the blue supply line is just dropping.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing the same thing in the car market. I mean, I had a good auctioneer friend I worked with for 30 years this morning tell me, Pete, just bought my wife a car, and the dealer told me, you know what, in 2 or 3 weeks, we're out. We're out.
Wow.
And obviously there's things in there in terms of the computer chips and all that stuff and shipping issues worldwide. And, you know, and then consider the price of steel is going through the roof. Yeah. And new equipment had been going up, you know, 4 or 5% anyway before all this started to happen. That's why I'm saying if you need a piece of equipment, new or used, you might want to get on it quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. A lot of sense. Okay.
I'm uncomfortable making predictions, but I feel uncomfortable not sharing that. So.
Well, yeah. And I've asked you to do stuff like that in the past on some different items, and basically have refused to do it. So I know how strongly you feel about this. I mean, that's
right.
That's pretty evident, Greg. We've talked so much about tractors and how so much of the focus is on tractors right now. Is that, would you say, looking back, that a tractor-led rally in used machinery values is, where is that in the timeline of the period of strength? Is it at the beginning? Is it in the middle? Or is it at the end?
Well, it's at the beginning, I think. I mean, so in the index, you know, we actually break it down by category. So tractors, we have four categories: four-wheel drive, 200 plus horse, 130 to 200, and under 100. So again, if you look at the individual ratings, for example, 130 to 200 horse, so basically loader tractors, on my 1 to 10 scale, we're up over 9 now, 9.1. And a year ago, it was 8. Four-wheel drive tractors this last quarter just went from 7.5 to 8.5 on my index scale. So the tractor market has just been on fire. That's the only way to say it. And again, if you're looking to sell, you are in the catbird seat, my friend.
Right. Right, absolutely. So, if you are looking to liquidate some equipment, maybe lighten up on your exposure. Some of that equipment out there, Greg, I feel like guys have held on to it for 2, 3, 5 years, something like that, with the idea that it would be a quote unquote investment, and it's working.
Yeah, and this is when I talk to the Wall Street crowd, I tell them, you know, you guys don't really understand the smarts out in farm country, because farmers pay attention to this stuff. And I think a lot of that new iron that was bought back in 08,
right,
10, 9, 10, 11, 12, it was used, but a lot of the hours were kept off, you know, half an eye on tax minimization when it was bought.
Yep.
So now you've got a low-hour 8, 10-year-old tractor. Everybody wants it. If you want to trade it or sell it, again, hello, cat.
Exactly. Exactly. Good stuff, Greg. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, sounds good, Chip.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could be with us today. And pay attention here, everybody. Pay attention to this one because you've heard me on the air talk about being safe when it comes time to having to climb into a grain bin for any reason, to follow the rules, to do it right. Well, maybe, just maybe, we're not going to have to climb into the grain bin anymore. I've got an awesome team with us right now. Ben Johnson and Zane Zents are students at the at the University of Nebraska, and they join us right now. They are on the Grain Weevil team. Gentlemen, this is so awesome. Welcome to AgriTalk. How you guys doing this morning?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Talk to you guys.
Excellent, so. Excellent. Okay, whichever one of you wants to take the lead on this one, go ahead. But the grain weevil, tell us what it is and what it does.
Yeah, I can take this one. So the grain weevil is a grain bin management management and safety robot. And it stemmed from an idea from our family friend, Farmer, who said, hey, look, you guys build robots. Why don't you build me a robot so I and my children never have to go into a grain bin again? And so that's where the idea started from the mind of a farmer. And ever since then, we have been full speed ahead designing this robot to meet the needs of the farmer so that he never has to get into a grain bin and his children never either, so that they can stay safe and stay out of the bin.
Now, Ben, didn't you grow up in where did you grow up, Ben?
Yeah, I grew up in Aurora, Nebraska, rural farming community.
Yeah, and Zane, what about you?
I grew up in Omaha, so, you know, a little more metropolitan area, but I'm still pretty close to everything around here in Nebraska.
Zane, how did you work up the enthusiasm for something like this? I mean, I mean, I understand the complexity of the project and everything, but I mean, getting your enthusiasm flowing for this, how did that happen?
Well, you know, I met Ben in college and he kind of explained the project to me and, you know, talked about the safety aspect and how many people we could help. And, you know, after hearing some farmers talk about, you know, how they've lost loved ones and or how they themselves have gotten injured, I got really passionate about the project. And, you know, it's also all the electronics, everything we're working on is super cool and super cutting edge. So that helps as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you guys. I mean, this is a project, an invention for the ag community. But it doesn't require any ag classes, does it, guys? I mean, what was most important that you picked up at the University of Nebraska in the development of this project, Ben?
Yeah, for that, we really, is like, the technical knowledge, a lot of that comes from what we've learned at the university. But I would also point to what we've learned from the farmers. As you know, neither of us are farm boys. Yeah. I didn't grow up on a farm. We hadn't actually even been inside a grain bin or looked into a grain bin until we started this project. So what we've learned from the farmers is, like, we can't measure that. That's the most important thing for us in designing this robot.
Right, right. Zane, how does it work? How does the robot work?
So, yeah, the robot uses two augers with an auger drive system, and it manipulates the top of the grain. Basically shifts it around and levels it like you would with a shovel. It can break up crusts. It can gather data and do inspections alongside your sensors you already have in the bin. And it can also help you, you know, feed the extraction augers so you can have a more efficient extraction process.
This is fantastic. And it all led to you guys winning the 2021 T $10,000 Eat It from the Lemelson MIT Student Prize. Ben, what does that mean to have your invention recognized this way?
For us, this is really huge. Being recognized on a national stage like this from such a renowned group,
yeah,
really just confirms a lot of the things that we have been hearing and we have been thinking about our own project. And it just has enabled us to reach more people and get those connections across the U.S. that will help us push this thing forward, because we're really trying to push as fast as we can so we can get this into grain bins and start saving lives and start helping farmers manage their grain bins.
Excellent. Zane, that, I was going to ask, what's next for the grain weevil, Zane?
Well, we're working with the money from the MIT Prize and really just, you know, proving out all of the, features that we want to get. So we're doing some on-the-farm trials this summer with some actual farmers over in Tennessee and Iowa and here in Nebraska. And we're going to get working on collecting data, getting our autonomous features to work perfectly. And then hopefully, you know, we can bring it to market pretty soon.
Man, I love this. You guys, this is like a prayer answered for me. It really is. It's something that I've talked about for years when I was at Pro Farmer, now here at AgriTalk, solving this, the problem that you guys are solving has been something that I've talked about for a lot of years. Congratulations, you guys. I cannot wait to see it in action. Ben, where do we go to learn more about it?
Yeah, you can go to grainweevil.com and fill out our farmer safety or our farmer survey, and then look us up on Twitter as well. That's where we can post a lot of our video updates and things.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. You guys, good for you. This is so cool. That is Zane Zentz and Ben Johnson. They're both students at the University of Nebraska. Good work, fellas. We'll keep track, and we'll have you back on to talk about it again, okay?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Wow. It is. It's like a prayer being answered. It's absolutely fantastic work. Guys, come back this afternoon. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the cattle markets with Scott Varlick. He's with KKV Trading. And tomorrow morning, we've got Donnell Rehagen from the National Biodiesel Board and Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group right here on AgriTalk.